Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo. This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show. When the Linux Action Show has Thanksgiving, it is freaking awesome. The resulting leftovers are so amazing, they taste like action diamonds of love, and we share them with our favorite projects and developers. Then, the K-Office project has been torn apart, and we dig through the fallout. Plus, we cover the shiny new bits of Android 2.3 that have us so excited. And so much more! All this week! On the Linux Action Show!
And welcome to Season 14, Episode... probably 8 of the Linux Action Show. I just forgot that. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is the man with the plan, not named Stan, that guy's Chris.
Hey there, Brian.
I was trying to come up with more rhymes.
That's pretty good.
Here's the thing that a lot of people don't know about me.
Yeah?
I'm not good
with
at freestyle rhyming.
That's why we didn't do a rapping podcast,
I don't get up. I'm not on the 8 miles,
right?
Where I'm like, yeah, doing in the moment.
Check out this funky rap.
I can't do that, Chris.
This rumored PlayStation Portable cell phone runs Linux. It's the PSP, the Sony PlayStation Portable, and an Android cell phone in one. You slide this thing up, and instead of, like, say, a QWERTY keyboard, you've got a controller in there where you have, like, your standard, you know, 5-button controls with all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's got the D-pad on it and everything
D-pad,
else.
That's the word I was looking for.
Now, I like this from several points of view. I mean, that's very cool. I think it'd be great for having a bunch of old console emulators on.
It'd be
awesome. What I don't understand is why this would be a PlayStation Portable phone, because I don't see how it's going to run PSP games.
I don't either.
Not current
boot,
ones.
Maybe?
No, I doubt
it's a thick one. I mean, it's a thick
the
phone.
The screen is an entirely different kind of resolution to aspect ratio to the current PSP.
I know.
And it's missing the nubs.
Yep, they have a touchpad in place of the actual analog nub.
And plus...
But it's a thick phone. It could run. It could have both pieces of hardware in there. It could have both pieces. Maybe it has PC guts and Android guts.
That'd be kind of interesting.
I'm not 100% solid...
I'm not sold on it.
I'm not 100% buying that it's going to come out. But
I'm not buying this.
A lot of spy shots, and now we've got spy video if you're watching the video version of Last, of this little phone that's going to be a PlayStation and an Android device from Sony Ericsson.
It could be really cool. I have nothing against if it happens. I'm just looking at this thinking... This doesn't seem very PlayStation-y.
Yeah.
Like, very little about that says PlayStation.
I'm with you.
It has a D-pad.
And, you know, all of the leaked videos we have seen, we haven't seen any
games
yet.
Yeah, and so. Honestly, yeah. Yeah, I don't buy it.
Now,
be cool, but I don't buy it.
I want to say, you know, apologies. Last week we had to sit out because we both got sick. I blame my son. I believe it was Dylan's fault.
No, it was definitely Dylan's fault.
Yeah, it seemed like...
blaming him all week.
He was like a health terrorist, Brian.
He destroyed us.
A targeted attack of the Linux Action Show.
Yeah, it's not cool.
I'm starting to suspect my son might be turning into a Windows user, playing towards a Windows agenda. Yeah, suppressing the Linux Action Show, Brian. So I got to work on that immediately.
That was a bit of a stretch right there. I mean, I thought it was adorable.
Oh, I'm just saying, Brian, there's been Brian, both hosts of the biggest Linux podcast got sick on the same weekend.
Oh, no, I agree. Two guys that happen to, on a weekly basis, sit in close proximity to each other. That doesn't make any sense why they would get sick at the same time. So it must be a targeted terrorist strike at the Linux Action Show. And if that were the case, which I think we just proved conclusively it is, it must obviously heretofore be... your son.
It's always somebody close to you, Brian.
And he would be doing it because he prefers Windows operating systems over Linux-based operating systems. That's what I understand.
That would be the motivator,
right?
Yeah, you got it.
Right.
So,
now, I'm just glad I understand where you were going with your logic.
Right.
I'm just glad I get it.
Hey, you know, I want to say we're going to be out in...
I get it.
For the holidays in 2 weeks. We're going to have an episode next weekend, but the weekend after that, the Linux Action Show will be out.
Man, the holidays are hard.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on
it's
for the
too
holidays.
Too much stuff, man.
Now, I have
we
got...
We should just cancel the holidays. It makes it so much easier.
Brian, if I could... I've even had conversations where we've talked about moving out of state just to avoid the family.
Have you really?
Sometimes.
He talked about moving out of state to avoid the holidays.
Many different family. We go to like six different family events on the holidays.
Yeah, that's what
we
do too.
It's just nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I sometimes fantasize about just sitting back and relaxing.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
It'd be glorious.
Absolutely. Now, what
state would you move to? Like, what would be the most out-of-the-way state so that family could just never find you?
Canada.
That would be a good state of the United States of America to move to. Canada's a good one.
I know. I would move to Canada.
What city? I'm thinking the city I would move to would be British Columbia.
Yeah, I'd move to the city of British Columbia.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's nice up there.
Now, I have got a Android pick, but should we say holler over to the boys over at GoDaddy.com?
Absolutely we should, because this episode of Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest domain host, blah, 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 registrar with websites. And
host,
they have servers.
Domain host.
They have servers. They have domain names. They have Danica back on the front page of the website.
That's good.
There's so many good things I can say about GoDaddy.com. Plus, if you buy things from them, which they sell many things, you type in Linux in caps as if you're screaming Linux at Danica, which just sounds like a fun thing to do.
I have.
You get 10% off of your entire order. How amazing is that? It's amazing.
I just
answered for you.
I had a little GoDaddy success story I wanted to share. Just a real quick one. I had a client who was an all Linux shop, and I don't work for them anymore, but they've been really happy with their Linux systems, and they called me up and they said, Chris, we're going to go to a Microsoft Windows domain. But you're all Linux guys. Why are you ruining this nice party, right? You know why they're going to all? You know what they wanted?
They wanted a Windows domain
just for Exchange.
Really?
Just for Exchange.
That's it.
That's crazy.
It's
ridiculous. So I told those boys, if you go over to GoDaddy.com, they've got also some Exchange hosting plans over there.
It's pretty cheap too,
dude. Check this out: $9.99 a month gets them an Exchange mailbox with full Exchange functionality, a BlackBerry, and you don't have to run an Exchange server yourself. Which means you don't have to run your own Windows server. So if you're trying to get an Exchange solution for somebody, $10 a month.
That's actually pretty awesome,
right? $10 a month, they get a full hosted Exchange system, and a lot of places charge a lot more for the BlackBerry and ActiveSync mobile syncing, and they're including it in that price for $9.99.
That's actually pretty awesome.
So when you go to GoDaddy.com, use our code Linux to save on 10%, or Linux 20 to save 20%.
How fancy is that?
I think it's fairly fancy.
It registers high on the fancy scale.
Brian, I want to talk to you a little bit about my Google picks, my Google Android picks.
Okay, lay it on me.
Now, I wasn't sure how people would feel about this one, and I thought maybe with the week that we missed, I might miss the excitement over the new Google Reader, Brian, for Android.
What
it's actually really nice.
You just have the total goofball thing going on today.
I do, I'm sorry.
And man, I am not buying any of it. I'm not having these shenanigans on this show. It's a professional show. We do journalism.
So the Googles finally put out their own reader for Android. Because, you know, before I was using NewsRob or using the online version. But this is a really nice unit that syncs in the background, works really well. It has a lot of the functionality you expect when you're using the web app. Like, I can go in here, I can star stuff, I can read articles. I can also, which I like to do lot in my feed, is I can share them into my BuzzFeed. So people can make comments on them. You can like stuff. So it's a really nice Google Reader application that automatically just syncs with whatever subscriptions you have in your reader.google.com.
Right.
And it's nice, fast. I have thousands of feeds, and it just chews through them, no problem. It's not a problem at all.
I love how well it chews through them.
So that's a free app.
I love chewing.
It's the official Google Reader application, and it's really nice. Now, I got a second pick for you since we were out last week.
Oh, man.
This is the one I was going to mention last week, but we didn't get a chance. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to Angry Birds Seasons, which is also free in the Android marketplace. Costs a buck for iPhone and iOS users, but us Android users get a freebie, and it's sort of like a little advent calendar where you unlock different phases as you progress through the game.
Oh, nice.
And you can't go ahead. You can't, like, unlock tomorrow's advent mission until you've unlocked.
So it's very Christmassy.
It's
not really seasons. It's just Christmas.
And they did a Halloween one, like, so they're doing certain.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotcha. Well, hey, I just want to give a quick shout out to Lifehacker. We're going to throw you guys a bone today. You can use both of these.
Oh.
Don't even have to reference us.
They might have already covered them. Who knows?
Nope.
Oh.
Not
oh,
yet.
Okay.
I don't know that to be true. But if you haven't, you guys can cover it based on this. You don't even have to reference us because we like you guys. This is a little freebie for you.
If you've been
happy holidays and such.
If you're a jerk and you've been out there being like, I'm not buying Angry Birds, that's for the noobs. It's free now.
So go over on your Android market.
It's kind of a fun game.
And check. It's fun. And
I mean, you can't play it for that long.
You just
but
sit there and, yeah, it kills 10 minutes.
Yeah, it kills 10 minutes. You know, you're trying to waste some time. You know, why not?
Absolutely, Brian.
Why not?
So
that's all I say.
I'll put links to both those bad boys in the show notes.
You should.
So head over to thejupiterbroadcasting.com and check those out, and you get the links to those.
We should register thejupiterbroadcasting.com, because that's how we say it a lot.
And thelinuxactionshow.com.
Yeah.
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 Mm. Huh. All right, Brian, let's do the news.
All right.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Our top story on the news docket for this week. K-Office becomes the Calegra
Suite. I think that was the first action news intro we've ever had.
Where I come running in from the other.
I liked it a lot.
Camera.
I liked it.
Yeah.
If you liked that, head over to jupitercolony.com and hop in. If it's not already there, create it. But make a forum in there called I Support Action Intros.
Action Intros.
And if you like it, lend your support in there. If you like them, we'll do more.
Eventually, Brian, I could just see that leading to me having to, like, come down from the ceiling. We'll have to invent transporter technology at some point.
Dude, I love the coming down from the ceiling. I love the type of... All right. First topic on the story this week.
All right. So let's talk about this, Calegra.
This is why I don't do the part you do.
This is kind of a big
deal.
Say
those words.
This K-Office, you know, is a powerhouse of office suites in Linux. I personally have found it sometimes a little easier to use than OpenOffice.
I like KOffice a lot. It's a great, great suite. It's got a few shortcomings here and there that OpenOffice doesn't have.
Right.
So I tend to use OpenOffice a little bit more.
Honestly, I tend to use Google Docs more these days.
Really?
I do, yeah. Just because I don't have to worry if the person I'm going to be working with is on a Linux box or on a Windows box. I just...
You know what I type in the most?
What?
Gedit.
Oh, word to that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Gedit, saving into a Dropbox.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I probably do 90% of all my typing in.
Yeah, true.
My to-do lists are in there. My note-taking is in there. Half the time when I'm writing up like a couple of page document for someone, right in
Gedit. And you know what's nice about Gedit is you always know, like, if you're whatever application you're taking from, like maybe a web page, if there's some sort of weird formatting, you throw it into Gedit and it just blasts it to plain text. You don't have to worry
about it. We should save talking about Gedit.
All right, we should. You're right, because that's going to be coming up in the next segment.
Teaser, we'll be mentioning Gedit.
You can tell there's a little bit of love for Gedit, and that'll be coming up
Everyone
in the next segment.
Everyone loves Gedit.
Let's go back to K-Office,
right, so
because
K-Office
this
is
an interesting story. K-Office is great, and this is, I think, you really have to, they're calling it a split, not a fork, and you kind of have to wonder, what's the difference between a split and a fork?
Yeah, what's the difference between a split and a fork?
A fork kind of implies that the original project is continuing, and that you're just taking a branch of it and going in a different direction. A split is the original project is actually discontinuing. K-Office is splitting up. There's going to be two groups. The folks in Group A will be K-Word, and the folks in Group B will be K-Presenter, Karitra, Carbon, and Kexi.
Okay.
So
K-Word's going to be off by itself. Now, all of them
But they're taking a fork of K-Word with the second group. So the second group that's going to have K-Presenter and the spreadsheet, they're renaming. They're going to go to Words and Sheets and stuff
that.
And they're going to take a branch of the K-Office K-Word editor with
them. So there's going to be two versions. So K-Word is forking. Everything else is just going with it. And so K-Word's going off by itself.
Right.
Is it just going to be called K-Word?
I think so.
And then the rest of it is going to be renamed to Calegra Suite.
Exactly.
And then they're renaming everything.
Now, here's where it gets kind of interesting. Now, first of all, I think from what I was reading online is it sounds like there hasn't been a lot of participation from the rest of the K-Office team in K-Word. So that might be a challenge for them now that they're forking it. If they haven't really had the opportunity to find the resources in the past to work on it, and so that's kind of how it became to the domain of this developer that's working on it now. I'm wondering how that'll work in the future. We'll see how that plays out. The other thing is it sounds like there might have been some pressure from outside influences that kind of broke the project up a little bit. Obviously, there's always going to be personality conflicts and stuff like that in open source projects.
Yeah.
But it kind of sounds like the move from K-Office was also a bit of a rebranding intentionally to get away from the KDE brand.
Gotcha.
Specifically, there's been mention lately in the news of a unspecified Qt-based complete office suite that's being created for the Migo platform.
So you think it might be based on this?
I think it is based on this. And I think that...
That would make sense.
I think that they're feeling pressure from Nokia and Intel and maybe some of the people on the Calligra team who are employed by Nokia. They're probably feeling pressure to sort of focus a little more on that mobile platform and a little less on the desktop, because I think they're hoping in a lot of ways that that's where they're going to see a lot of penetration. So it's kind of an interesting direction. I don't know a lot to say. I'm not huge on the name. I think that's my first actual, as weird as first impressions go, I didn't love the name. I kind of thought, it sounds like...
Calligra's all right. You use calligraphy to write and...
To write, yeah.
I mean, it sounds fine.
I guess so.
I mean, come on, look at the other names out there. OpenOffice.org.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's
for
a terrible
sure.
name.
No, you're right.
That's just
right.
an awful name.
No, you're right. It just... I don't know. I hate to see this kind of stuff happen, but it sounds like everybody's being really respectful, and it sounds like might be some tension in the community, it sounds like they're doing it with, you know, and for the most part, from what I've seen in the public areas where you can read these kind of things, the conversation has always been very civil.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, as long as everything with KOffice or Calligra or whatever it ends up being called is okay and development continues like it has been, I'll be happy, because there's been a lot of improvement over the last few years in the KOffice suite.
I know, and you kind of hate to see a kind of always improving open source project like this run into personality conflicts and interest conflicts that can break it up, because it's a vulnerability that open source projects suffer from that maybe some commercial products don't as much. Teams can be broken up on commercial products, but one company is still driving that and things like that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's a little uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
Because
it's a bit uncomfortable.
It's a little uncomfortable because I grow to depend on these things, and so I need to be able to have faith in their long term.
I want to see consistency
viability.
And stability in it, yeah.
Because if I'm building something of value on my own based around their work, I need to know that their work will continue for as long as I need it to do what I'm doing, and I want to be able to access my previous creations and things like that. So I do get a little hesitant.
I agree. I agree.
Right. Well, now let's move on to something a little different, Brian. It's been a pretty big week last week for Google, and this isn't the Google show, so we're not going to really go into all of it.
You sure it's not the Google show?
Boy,
kind of seems like
it's
sometimes.
Been a Google week, hasn't it, though? I mean, we're probably not going to talk much about Chrome OS, maybe a little bit here and there.
Please don't.
You know, all this other stuff, but the one thing...
I'm not interested in Chrome OS right now.
I know.
I don't care.
I know.
You know what it is? Chrome OS is a web browser. You know what I've used before?
Web browsers. They're just not targeted to us.
I guess not.
Yeah.
I guess not. Did you see the thing, though, where Google came out and said, you know what? If everyone's not having a complete paradigm shift, so everyone's using a Chrome OS or a in-the-cloud operating system, we'll have failed. I'm like, really? This is where this is everything? This is the end goal here, Google, is to make sure that everyone... I guess it makes sense. They want everyone to have all of their data on Google servers at all times.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah,
but
it makes sense for them.
But it's terrible. It's like, why does it... This is an awful idea. It's just plain awful. We were sitting here before the show. We have a Google Doc that we keep, you know, some of our show notes in.
Truth.
I had it up over here, wasn't touching it. I just had it here for looking at it. There it is, right there. Fancy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chris had it up over there, was adding one, like, note. One line. Not even a full sentence. Like, we're talking like four words. He switched tabs.
All
of a sudden, everything got jumbled up. Everything got rearranged. Auto-saved. Over here, blam, just a mess. And then he went to undo it.
Yeah.
And what had happened? It like pasted in the wrong size, in the wrong spot, not where his cursor was, an entirely different sentence that wasn't on his clipboard or wasn't the last thing he did.
He was like in some Google Doc clipboard.
Yeah, so this sort of thing.
And that's in Chrome.
Now that's in Google's web browser, the current version, the official version, and their suite. And this happens all the time. And it's not like, you know, that's awful. Bugs like this happen.
No big deal.
Yeah. But normally, I'm saving stuff locally and can back it up,
Brian,
and have revisions and all sorts of stuff.
It actually makes me angry. And the reason it makes me angry is because it's like they don't value my time. And here's why I say that. And it's just... These are problems we don't need to have. They're problems we fixed. They're problems the computer industry as a whole has solved. And now we're reintroducing new problems and we're reducing functionality and usability. And that includes accessibility and speed for what?
I don't know. I don't know what I get.
And it bugs the crap out of me that I, to this day, because they want to move this stuff forward all the time, and okay, if I want to use this for its collaborative efforts, I gotta go, and I gotta go 15 years back in functionality as far as a word processor goes.
Yes,
drives me crazy, Brian.
Yes, I don't understand it at all. Like, I mean, anyway, we can talk more about Chrome OS when there's a device actually shipping. Word. Right now, they've just got that that dev device that a couple people
get.
CR48
or whatever it is.
Yeah, and that's fine. You know, I know some people are probably gonna like it. That's great.
I put my hat in the ring for one. If I get it, I'll do a tour of it here on Last.
Honestly, you know what I don't get?
I might just put Ubuntu on it, though.
It looks an awful lot like the little, except 2 years later.
Hmm.
I don't see any piece of functionality that the Chrome OS has that the little didn't have 2 years ago.
Boy, if you
except the little actually has more because it still has a more interesting UI in my opinion.
Go do a search on our site for the little review.
LITL.
We did a review of that on Linux Action Show. It's a pretty interesting device.
Yeah, honestly, it's better. It's better in every conceivable way I can think of.
Hmm.
And now, do I want a little for my everyday computing device? No. Maybe for like my sit around on the couch and web browse device, sure.
You know what I could use it for?
But not every day.
I could have it right here off to my side for the chat room or to have a live stream monitor.
Yeah, exactly.
But I would rather just pay, I mean, that for that kind of functionality, I don't want to pay more than $150 for a machine.
Exactly.
So I don't see where their price is going to be able to land that's going to get me excited.
And even if it was free, if you could have that for free or a device that dual booted Windows and Linux and could play all sorts of games and had all sorts of power and a local storage and a DVD drive and everything for $400, I'm still going to pay $400 and get the fancy machine.
We got my MSI Wind over there. It was a $300 computer.
You can get it nowadays for like $150.
It was like 2 years ago. It's still got a 1-point-something gigahertz Atom in it.
Yep.
And it's got a 100-and-something gigabyte hard drive.
And you know what's great about it?
Huh.
You can put Chrome web browser on it, make it full screen with one key press, and pretend like you're running Chrome OS.
Well, I think I'm probably going to be able to download Chrome OS, too. I'm not sure.
Probably.
So let's talk about but while we're talking about Google, let's
talk about Android.
Let's finish off our Google story here on the news docket, and that is Android 2.thrizzle. And a lot of UI improvements, actually. Just polish. The new text selection.
Oh, that looks good.
God, text selection sucks so bad on Android. And this is one of the things that you don't. If you have an Android phone that's not stock, you might not know how bad it is. Because Motorola and Samsung and HTC, they put a wrapper on it.
Yeah.
But stock Android text selection doesn't exist at all. It sucks. So this is a nice feature that they're adding. I can't believe nobody talks about this because everybody's busting Microsoft's balls over copy and paste. Well, how about frickin' text selection? So there's that. Also, a great new UI to manage the applications and things that are taking resources on your Android phone. I think that looks pretty slick.
It looks all right.
They got a little bar up there with your battery life and all that kind of stuff.
I like that, actually.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
cool, the battery life thing.
I like that Google isn't afraid to show the geeks information they want because whenever they show this kind of stuff, the Apple fanboys always get up and immediately go, oh, you shouldn't have to have that. Blah, blah, blah. But you know what? The iPhone wouldn't kill it to have something like that either.
Seriously.
And it's nice that Google does this for
us. And seriously, I bet if Apple came out with a thing where they had that there, all the Apple fanboys would be like, that's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this gives you so much more power over your system.
Right.
Oh, Apple's revolutionary about
and the
getting
UI
power
for doing
to users.
Is so much
oh,
better.
So great.
Yeah. And let's be honest, iOS does have a task manager. When you double tap that home button and that little thing comes up, that's your task manager.
And it's terrible.
And to say that iOS doesn't have a task, and you don't know what any of those applications, which ones are taking CPU, this is actually a nice feature. Now, another thing that I am really excited about is baked right into the freaking call application, SIP support. For internet
I like
calling.
That.
Now,
yeah.
It doesn't ship with a SIP provider, so it's not all set up out of the box.
But
if you have a SIP server.
And that's not hard to get.
No, and you know, Google Voice bought the Gizmo Project. You can connect to the Gizmo Project over SIP.
Yep.
So I'm betting, I'm waiting for Gingerbread to come out of my Evo, but I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be able to make Google Voice SIP calls over data now and not over my cell connection.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. It also supports SIP present support. So if you have like a corporate server where you want to know when people are online or offline and like say you have a client, they'll be able to log in and tell them all of that. So that's cool. That's really nice to build that in. It's kind of a surprise kick in the twigs and berries to the carriers.
Huh.
You know? I mean, to see Google do that. Now,
it's a kick in the twigs and berries to the carriers.
Manufacturers.
You heard it here first. Linux Action Show, ladies and gentlemen. Now, when you tomorrow go to lifehacker.com and you see that the top story is Google kicked the carriers in the twigs and berries, you know where that came from.
Now, let's talk about a couple of last few improvements and we'll move on from Android.
Twigs and berries.
Because this is interesting because it actually gets things a little back more into the Linux territory. And that is a few of the updates, along with new updated drivers for, Brian, get ready for it.
Ready.
The platform is how they refer to it in this entire document.
Now, I closed my eyes. Did you use finger quotes there?
It was air quotes of amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
So they've improved the drivers for Android, but what really kind of struck me is they've enabled native ability to write to the audio and video hardware platforms. So here's the quote for the graphics stuff.
Using Kronos.
Yeah, using the Kronos EGL library, which is a really, really well-supported open library, which lets applications manage graphics context and create and manage OpenGL ES textures and surfaces from native code. So that means
that's cool.
Native applications on Android will get, and they also implemented the same support for a new audio API that they put in.
Yeah.
So both hardware, native access to hardware and video now on Android. This could be huge for gaming.
It could be huge for gaming. It seems like it's just an additional bit of kludge, though. That's my only concern.
Because my understanding of Android development is user applications live in that Java virtual machine.
Yeah.
So if you want native code, it's going to have to be a separate instance, a separate process, right?
Kind of. It's
going to have to be some sort of disconnect.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a disconnect. It's just they keep every single release, they keep changing things up how you're going to develop. It's like they're still not sure
locked it in.
How Android is going to be built yet.
Or,
it's like we're at 2.3 and we're pre-1.0. You know what I mean?
Or do they want to just be always like on the latest open standard?
But that doesn't seem like what it is, because they've not been, even this is not the latest open standard. This isn't like the most fastest, powerful thing you could possibly have.
Right.
It's good. I like this. I kind of wish they'd come out with 3.0. With a huge flurry of API changes.
I thought that's what I get the suspicion that's why they're waiting for 3.0.
Yeah.
3.0 will be a huge set of API
just
changes.
A ton, and then just solid for a while.
Because,
and not change it between 3.0 and 4.0. Like, give us a year or two where we can build our apps, use the latest and greatest, really get to know the system, and then you can add some more stuff.
And you got to admit, you just cannot deny, as much as an Android fan as I am, the games on the iPhone and iPod just kick Android's arse.
They do.
Badly.
Badly.
That has got to be in a large part due to the differences in development. It's got to be.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's got to be easier to make games on the iPhone or something.
On the Android, you got a wide variety of devices, different hardware, different screen resolutions, even different types of touch screens, so you can get different like levels of accuracy, different types of sound hardware, different APIs to be used depending on the version you're using, the fact that you're dealing with Java and your multitasking system.
That's not an impossible feat. You just say, all right, we're setting the bar here, all devices at this range. We're not saying all Android
devices.
Here's
the thing. If you're a dev, like, and I've been kind of looking at it lately, like, if we were to hop into a little bit of games dev and go with Android, what phone – you really have to specifically say not this level. You have to specifically say the Droid S and these three other specific phones are supported and nothing else.
Right.
And that
– and that's what the Angry Birds guys just came out and did.
And then all of a sudden, you actually are down to extremely small market share.
Yeah.
Then you're not taking advantage of this massive Android market share that's beating iOS into submission right now.
Right.
What you've really got is something that's like – maybe a tenth the size of an iPhone?
Because there's a good possibility that the Androids, you know, so they came out and said we're activating 300,000 a day. 300,000 a day! That's a lot of Android
devices. That's a lot of Android devices.
But you got to figure, if it's that many Android devices, there's a good chance they're the really cheap, freebie, crappy ones.
Probably.
So that could be a hardware challenge. But at a certain point, maybe that starts to self-correct as the hardware just gets to a certain level. I don't know.
We can hope. We can hope. The one thing I actually thought was kind of cool, and I kind of like when Microsoft came out with Windows Phone 7, they made a line. They said, here you go. Here's the screen resolution, the power, the graphics capabilities in the API set, and that's what all of the phones are like.
Yep.
The end result is, well, all the phones kind of look the same, and it's not all that exciting.
It's not
from a dev standpoint.
Yeah, it's great.
I get to look at that. I'm like, oh, well, if I can make it run on one,
right,
I'm good.
Yeah.
And I kind of would like to see that for Android.
But from a consumer standpoint, don't you kind of dig that all
I'm not a consumer. I'm a dev. I don't care about consumers.
All right.
My job is to make sure that I disregard the needs and desires of the average consumer so that I can make my life as a developer easier.
I see. I'm sorry, Brian. I didn't understand. So
I'm just kidding.
That's
It is cool. It is cool. I like that they're adding in new features. I just it just seems like they keep adding in new stuff like that a lot.
It does, and you kind of feel like, okay, great. Now we've got native access to hardware for audio and video, but
and with how often they've been changing the virtual machine that runs it, honestly, my guess is by the time the next release comes out, there'll be an entirely different 3D API set and everything else to use.
Yeah,
so
and
that's where I start to be like, I don't know.
I think too that there's a good chance that you know we're going to see a big change in gaming for Gingerbread. And that's cool. But also, you got to give a nod. It looks like another release where they really amped up the performance in a big way. The videos I have seen and the comments that they make in the new version, it sounds like they've cleaned up. They've added garbage collection for the gaming APIs. I don't know exactly what that is, but supposedly the early tests show improved gaming, like frame rates and stuff like
that's
that.
That's good. That's very good.
And the system performance, Gizmodo has, I think it was Gizmodo, it was in Gadget, maybe it was in Gadget, has a video of the Nexus S running Android 2.3, and it is truly snappy fast. It's like, that's exactly how fast Android needs to be. Like, you know, it feels responsive on my hacked Evo. It feels probably the fastest I've ever seen Android.
It should
go.
Be faster still.
It could be faster yet. Yeah. And when I saw it in that video, I was like, oh yeah, that feels like raw native metal performance is what it looked like.
That'd be nice. That would make me a very happy little man.
All right, let's talk a little OpenSUSE news here, B-Man.
Yes, sir.
So, just a correction from the chat room. Yeah, it was Engadget had the video. OpenSUSE announces the fourth development milestone. But what's interesting about this is they're including that new kernel interactivity 200-line patch that gives it the speed boost.
Oh, they're including that.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a lot of distros start doing this as their feature for the next revision. It includes, because you know these distros love to have that on there, and they need it, honestly. They often
need it. There's not a problem with it, and it is giving everyone a speed boost. Why not?
Yeah, so that 200-line kernel patch, you know, came down to somebody came out and said, here's a 233-line patch you can apply to the kernel that it just dramatically improves performance. And people were saying, yeah, you know, now look, when I'm building the kernel, I can watch 1080p video. My mouse doesn't get soupy. Okay, great. Neat.
Hey, I like that.
I know.
A lot of times when I'm building something big, I want to be able to watch video, and I hate it when my mouse gets soupy.
So this guy from Red Hat.
I do not put up with soupy mice.
This guy from Red Hat, he said the same thing. He's like, hey, I want that, but I don't want to have to rebuild my kernel. So he made a userland tweak you could do. But it is not persistent. It has to be applied at boot every time. And so the debate came up, well, do we apply it system-wide for every single user across the system at the kernel level?
I don't see why not.
Or do we do it at the user level and don't touch the kernel because they had to add some small functionality to the kernel to make it work, but at the user level, the functionality was already there and it was just taking advantage of it.
I don't see why we don't put it in the kernel.
That's what kind of sounds like the distributions are
saying. If it's working and it's tested,
so it sounds like there might
be, go for it.
It sounds like there might just be a final consensus from the distribution standpoint that we're just going to bake it in because we want that as a feature add. And if you get the new OpenSUSE 11.4 milestone, you can get it now.
You know what? That's kind of like having, you know, you either have your machine run really fast, or it's like, you remember in the old days when they had the turbo buttons on the front?
Yes.
Of course you're going to run it in turbo mode.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, if you've got a machine, you're not going to run it in not turbo mode. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
That's how I live life in with the turbo mode. Right?
Honestly, if every appliance, car, everything I had a turbo button on it, it'd be always pressed in for everything.
Absolutely.
They'd have turbo buttons. So if what this is basically saying is, here's OpenSUSE, turbo's pre-applied.
Absolutely.
You don't even have to push the button.
So OpenSUSE 11.4, Milestone 4 has that, and it also has things in there like GNOME 2.3.2.
No, that would be great. There was just like a little GNOME applet that was turbo. Yeah, click
that would it. Be. I don't
know.
What,
then your desktop goes
I would
turbo.
Always have that engaged and just and I wouldn't even be able to tell if it made a difference. I would just hope.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I would assume that it made a difference. Yeah.
All right, I just want to cover this interesting story because it's I don't know. It feels like we haven't talked about the Linux standards base in a really long time. And the Linux standard base 4.0, it also has betas, I guess. I didn't realize that it goes through beta incarnations itself. And, you know, that LSB is just kind of this general guiding standard that says you can expect these libraries and these binaries in these places and things like that.
Yep.
But here's what's great about it. So here's the announcement from the Linux Foundation announced the certification to Linux standards base 4.0, which includes pretty much all of the major big distros right now.
Isn't that great?
And their modern incarnations, which it's good to see the LSB staying current. And it's good to see that this isn't something that's gone away, because you gotta figure.
I love it.
People looking at this, people that come from the outside looking at the Linux world wanting to get involved, they got to see something like Linux Standard Base and go, oh, phew, okay. Well, I can wrap my brain around. So I think it's kind of an important thing from that angle.
I love it.
Yeah, all right.
I have absolutely nothing bad to say. The Linux Standard Base is good to have.
Rest to the LSB people. All right, let's talk about
it. We need to have it.
Let's talk about something.
Man, we've been covering Linux Standard Base for like 4 years.
That's why I wanted to throw that
that's
in
there. That's awesome.
Okay, I got two news stories in the news docket to end to wrap us up that are awesome. The first one is kind of a congrats to you, B-Man.
Oh, we get to talk about that one.
Illumination software creator hits the Ubuntu Software Center.
Darn tootin'. It's in the Software Center. You load up that Ubuntu Software Center, click the for purchase area, boom, Illumination Software Creator. Now, that's cool.
That is cool.
That's cool. I love that. We're actually application number 7 to be in the Software Center's
kidding.
Purchase area. Number 7. But check out the list here. This is what I think is extra cool. If you look at the list, for those of you not watching the video version, when you get to an Ubuntu machine, load it up, you'll see what we're talking about. The Illumination Software Creator is right below the Fluendo codecs, which is cool because I love the Fluendo codecs. Yeah. They make great video and audio codecs, and that's great. And right above, Vendetta Online and World of Goo, which are two of my favorite games. So I'm stuck between three things that I'm a huge fan of. I don't know if I put this in my blog post. I think I did. It's kind of like being an actor, and you're just starting out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get to see your movie poster for the first big movie you're in, and it's you with George Clooney and Brad Pitt right next to you, but you're like a little bigger. just like a little. Like, it looks like they photoshopped you to be larger with like a halo behind you, but you're right between these two big guys. That's kind of what this is like.
That's neat.
I mean, I know, you know, this isn't like, being on a billboard in Times Square, you know, bathing in sunlight and gold, but it's cool for me. But even more so, it's cool that cool apps like Vendetta Online and World of Goo are getting
both
good exposure and kind of lending some legitimacy to the Ubuntu store. And
so,
I dig it.
You got a good post over at lunduke.com on that.
Lunduke.com.
All right, last story, just a quick one. It is awesome because it also is representative of where the Linux Action Show has, what kind of growth we have seen since.
And now, immediately, the chat room is giving me a hard time for choosing Brad Pitt and George Clooney as the big actors. I'm sorry. Insert your favorite actor from your favorite indie films that you want. You know, whatever you want.
Check this out, Brian. So, you know, when we started the Linux Action Show, I worked.
All right. On my right will be Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay, there you go.
All right. And on my left, let's do Iron Man Robert Downey Jr. Because, honestly, some of the other Robert Downeys, Iron Man Robert Downey, he's been drinking a bit.
Yep.
And Samuel's cussing off to my right, and I'm in the middle.
Yep.
That's what it makes me feel like. There
right.
we go.
So check this story out. You know, when I started the Linux Action Show up, or when we started the Linux Action Show up years ago, I was working at a school district, and the Linux market share was, around, barely 1% at best.
Well,
it was low. It was
low.
2%. So officially, this is from the WS3schools.com trend tracking. And the way they do this is, basically a lot of the school traffic in the U.S. routes through their network.
Yeah.
So they're able to track the system use. And
that's awesome.
Linux has officially hit 5% in U.S. schools.
Holy crud, 5%, muffins.
5% desktop penetration.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So,
awesome.
Not actually that far off from the Mac. The Mac is sitting at 7%. The Mac and Linux are both climbing. Windows is actually having the decline.
That is stellar.
And that's just great. 5% is a real number. That's a real number.
So look at those numbers. 4.5, 4.8, 4.9. I mean, that's some pretty steady, awesome growth.
That's why I'm reporting. Yeah, that's exactly. That's the other thing.
And last
5%.
Year was low 4%. I mean, percentage increase over the course of the last year plus a little.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
It's a steady climb. It's about a percentage gain every year, which is awesome. And that's increasing because it wasn't a percentage gain every year. It's getting faster.
That is stellar.
Yeah, yep. All right, Brian.
Stellar.
Well, that's all the news.
Go team.
For this week.
Recently, here in the United States of America, it was Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
And we liked that.
I love to eat, Brian.
I like eating food. Now, one of the things you're supposed to do at Thanksgiving is give thanks to something. Yeah. Now, you know, because of holidays and other news and being sick, we haven't had the chance to do our We Give Thanks
Still
episode.
Still tis the season, Brian.
Tis the season, whatever that means. So we are going to give some thanks. And we're going to do it our way here. We have each gone our own ways and come up with the open source developers we are most thankful for and why.
Hey, and you know what? There's also an epic thread in the Jupiter Colony forum that I'll put a link to in the show notes where everybody's shouting out a few of theirs. And some of ours are some of theirs, too. So
yeah, there's too many to pick.
Yeah.
If your favorite rock star dev is not on one of these lists, my apologies.
But we just figured.
This is just, I tried to keep mine at five. Five projects and some of the devs involved that I think are the most
exciting. Open source software and tools that you can't live without.
They need a shout out.
Yeah.
So let's just dive right into it. I'm going to do one, then you do one. How's that sound? We'll trade off. All right. I'm going to start off right off the top of the bat with GnomeDo.
Yeah, good call.
Now, I love GnomeDo. GnomeDo is a great app. If you haven't used GnomeDo, you should.
Yeah.
This is where Docky came from. And GnomeDo is just awesome.
Oh, now, there's so slick.
There's two main apps I want to give a shout out to. One is David Siegel, who started the project, and Alex Launi. I'm not sure. Looney or Launi. Yeah. I'm not sure how to say his name.
The names are kind of hard.
Launi. That's how you spell it. So tell me how you say that. I just don't know. But he's currently maintaining it. Those two guys have done great work. Everyone else who has contributed to the project has done great too.
Those are the head guys with the whole desktop. I mean, it is. You can even use it to send input output from one thing into a file from another thing through GnomeDo. You can.
Yep.
Oh, it's so great.
They did a great job with it. I just want to give a shout out to those guys. What do you got?
I like that one a lot. It's a good pick, Brian. All right. Now, mine is I'm going to just get my one pick that's not Linux-based out of the way. It's still open source.
What are you talking about?
Well, this is the open source tool that makes the Linux Action Show get out every day. This is from Squared 5. It's called MPEG Stream Clip, and it's only for Mac or Windows.
What?
And we run this on a Mac machine that does X264 encoding, so we can use the open source X264 encoder. It lets us transcode all kinds of different various formats, and it is such an awesome tool. The tool itself is, I would say, there's probably tools out in the market that cost around $1,000 that are dedicated tools to do this, and it does it for free.
Well, that's great. Does it run on Linux, though?
That's why I just want to get it out of the way, because that's what I encode the Linux Action Show with. And so I want to give it.
I got you.
It's Linux Action Show related. Without it, we would have no video version.
I got you. Well, hey, big shout out to them.
Now make a Linux version, you jerks.
Yeah, watching this and deciding to make a Linux version.
Yeah.
So.
Please. All right.
Thank you.
You want to pick the next one?
Yeah, I got one more.
Actually,
I got four more.
Yeah.
Next one I want to throw out, you know what, is another small little app that everyone uses all the time.
Yeah.
It's Tomboy.
Oh, boy. Tomboy.
Got to talk about Tomboy.
Oh, boy, Brian. It's Tomboy.
The little note-taking app that could. The main developer there, Alex Gravely.
Alex Gravity.
Gravity? Let's just call him Gravely.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's as if to be gravelish.
Yeah.
So it's awesome. Tomboy's awesome. Everyone loves Tomboy.
Absolutely.
It's in every distro for the most part. Or it's in a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah.
Did a great job. Way to go, Alex. High fives all around. Which I should point out, interesting. First two apps I pick, both devs named Alex.
Also, just out of curiosity.
Does that blow your mind or does that blow your mind?
Well, wait, just out of curiosity, is GnomeDo's mono too, right?
Yeah.
So your two favorite apps are mono apps.
Yeah, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right. So here's my pick. You ready for my next?
That's totally coincidence.
Okay.
By the way.
Okay. My next pick, and I kind of tipped my hat on this earlier, but you guys, I love Gedit.
Gedit's so great.
Hard love.
So great.
It first of all, it's got just a really great UI, but it has also a really handy plugin architecture. And there's a lot of really great plugins like the spell checker for me. Also, it has a nice handy change case. I'll find a lot of times that I'm opening up a file and I'll have cases wrong, or if I want to do a path and I go from an operating system that does it, it does great, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it changes that. But also, it just stays minimal and fast and out of my way.
And works always.
Syntax highlighting is solid. The line numbering is solid.
And what's great about their syntax highlighting is that it works with so many languages.
Yeah.
Like, It's very rare. I'll throw ActionScript in there.
Really?
It handles it pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much
ActionScript's great at.
Well, it's similar to JavaScript.
You can also,
so it's not that big a surprise. But still, it's awesome how well Gedit does.
I go back and forth between using Gedit and Evernote for note taking.
Do you really?
Because when I'm on a client's machine, it's nice to have Evernote for formatting, but when I'm on a Linux box, I always use Gedit.
See, I always use Gedit.
Yeah, and so I always, by default, Gedit's like my always go-to area.
See, I'm a pure text kind of guy.
Like, I like
having a GUI. Yeah. I like having a lot of GUI tools. Yeah. I'm not like a live in Emacs kind of crazy man. But just the same, if I just have like I want to put together a list or some notes, it's nice to have it in just text.
I have,
because the moment you start adding formatting, you start adding compatibility issues, you start having problems opening
size.
It on some machine, it takes up too much space.
I wanted to give you a name of an app, but I'll make it an Android pick after I've used it some more. But I'm using Gedit, and I have a directory in my Dropbox. It's dedicated for my notes. And then I have an app on my Android phone, which is a plain text editor that syncs to Dropbox. So that's what I've been using. So a combination of Gedit to Dropbox, and then on my phone, I've been using an app to edit those same files.
I do the same thing, Gedit to Dropbox. And then I take it a step further, and I use an app called Conduit, which is not actually one of my picks, but almost should be.
Yeah.
Conduit syncs. You can sync Tomboy notes to text files, and you can have those text files synced to your Dropbox, to a specific folder, and it can be in your Dropbox folder, which means you can constantly have synced notes back and forth between Tomboy and text files in Dropbox, and then you can use Tomboy for it. It's very handy.
Now, the other thing, too, if you use a Gedit for note-taking, is you might check out they have one of the plugins they have lets you do tags, embed tags into the metadata of a file. So you can also – that's nice for searching and stuff like that. So
it's way cool.
Check that out. All right, Brian, you want to do another
Yes, yes, yes. All right, I want to shift gears a little bit. I'm going to go to the game side of things.
Ooh.
I want to talk about Scum.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Scum VM because I love old school adventure games. The cool thing about Scum VM right now, so it runs on every platform on the planet, essentially, at least all the good ones.
Right.
It certainly runs on my N900 and my N810 and all my Linux desktops. I'm not 100% sure what else there is, to be honest with you, so I couldn't tell you. But it runs on all those. And the really great thing is they recently came out with an update that adds support for something called the Sierra Creative Interpreter. What this means is it runs essentially every old LucasArts adventure game, you know, the Maniac Mansions and Day of the Tentacles and all that stuff. But also,
this is an
on
Amiga
top of
here,
that, it now supports Space Quests, all of them. The King's Quest games, all of them. So many great games. The Leisure Suit Larry games. It is phenomenal. I believe if someone's asking in the chat room, does it run on iQ? I believe it does. If
Probably.
You go to the download page right now, you will see downloads.
For like
get a shot
everything.
Of this. This is phenomenal. Now, I know this is the Linux Action Show, but scroll down a little bit.
So you got starting
look at, that.
At the top, you got Windows, and you got just about every Linux distribution ever, Mac OS X.
You got
10,
Android binary.
PlayStation 2
Symbian.
Package.
There's a Dreamcast version in there. Nintendo 64.
Can we talk about how you can load Scum VM on your PlayStation 2 or a Wii or a Nintendo?
Amazing.
GP2X, of course.
So now, this is great. Now, it's too hard to shout out to every dev that's on theirs, that works on this project.
Yeah, I know.
There's
a
ton of them. But I'm going to give a shout out to the two dev leads on the project right now. There's two of them. There have been some in the past that I'm not gonna shout out to, only because it's hard to shout out to that many people. I'm going to shout out quickly to Max Horn and Eugene Sandulenko, who are the two current leads of the ScumVM project. And the ScumVM has done an amazing job. And I just had to shout that out because, honestly, those games are great.
Good on
and
you.
And here's the
I
awesome
agree
part.
With you, sir.
You can do this fully legally. If you're running a Linux desktop, you load up ScumVM, and then you go to GOG.com. When you go to Good Old Games, you can buy as a pack all the old Space Quest and King's Quest games for like $5-$10. And then you can run them in ScumVM at full speed with great sound and support.
Legally.
And they play great. And it's
legal.
100% legal, no DRM at all. Awesome. I love that. I love that so much. What's really great here? Tablets. If you've got a Linux-powered device with a touchscreen playing point-and-click adventure games, dozens and dozens
of them. Pad?
I'm doing that on the IdeaPad nearly every day. It is a phenomenal experience.
That does sound fun.
It's great. Try doing that on your Chrome OS-based network.
Whoa. All right, now I. Okay,
that's a zinger. Max really Horn, Eugene Sandulenko, way to go, guys.
I don't know the name of.
Give
the
kudos to the
guys.
Rest of the team for us.
So this is. I have to apologize for this one. I don't know their specific names, but the Banshee Project is single-handedly what has made the Linux desktop extremely enjoyable for me in a lot of ways. At least when it comes to my media audio management and my podcast management, which has been so awesome for road trips, I effing love Banshee. I know a lot of you out there like Amrock, and a lot of you out there like Rhythmbox. I understand, totally cool with that, but I just want to give my personal appreciation to Banshee. I have had it sync with my Android phones in the past, with my podcasts. I just love it. So, and Brian, I know you also are a big fan of Banshee.
I am a huge fan of Banshee. Yeah. All right, so the main developer, his name is Aaron Bakover. Aaron Bakover. There might be more developers, but that is the main developer.
That's the main guy? Okay.
At least according to Wikipedia.
I like it. There you go.
Fantastic. So definitely that would be one of my picks if Chris had not already picked.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Love it. So next up, I got to give a shout out to this guy because this guy represents so much that is good and right in the open source world.
Whoa!
So Ardour.
Yeah.
Ardour. It is an audio editor. That's what it is. And it's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a very good one.
High-end, yeah.
It's phenomenal, does some great, great stuff. If you need to make, you know, professional music, if you're working on a podcast and, you know, the simpler tools are not doing it for you, Ardour is the place to go. It is being developed by a guy named Paul Davis.
Paul Davis. Now, what's interesting about Paul Davis, Brian?
Well, Paul, hold on.
Okay, all right.
Now, Paul Davis is also one of the guys responsible for Jack, the audio connection kit.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's kind of all blammo right there.
Yeah, this guy's got some serious chops. And I like his donation model that he has set up.
Yes. Now, this is the big thing, is he has a donation model. He's like, I want to work on this full time.
Yeah.
Donate.
Yeah.
You guys donate. Let's track it each month. Let's see if I can live off of this with you guys donating. And obviously, this is high end. So the people that need this and use this are high end.
They do audio
editing for a living.
Absolutely.
So does it get close? Some months it does better than others. It definitely doesn't do as well donation wise as it should. But he does a pretty good job with that, and it's amazing.
I see some logic in it too, to be honest with you, because the professional audio editing market is extremely high end, and costs are just the cost of the software and all this stuff
off the charts.
So you know every year or two you drop a huge chunk of change, and whereas this guy, you know, maybe if you can give him a $20 donation, if you're using it as for a business purpose, you're getting, you know, updates as he releases them. And they're not holding it to be some big commercial software release 2.0 surprise your pants off release, and oh my god, you've got to download this right now, it's going to be amazing. They're just giving you as they're ready, so your money's always getting value.
Yep. Now,
I like that about open source
projects. One other tidbit I want to throw out there on Paul Davis: he was one of the first two developers of Amazon.com. That's right. When Amazon.com, back when it started, he actually left the company a long time ago, like right after it started. But in the late 90s, he left
the company. This guy's got Amazon.com under his belt. He's got
the Jack Audio Connection Kit, Ardour. I mean, he's worked on some really cool stuff.
I'd like to talk to this guy.
So I want to give a shout out to Paul Davis.
This guy.
That guy. He's done some cool stuff. He deserves a high five or three.
All right. Now, this one is definitely, definitely, definitely high up on my list, but it was also called out a lot in the Jupiter Colony thread, so I want to give it a specific mention, and that's to VLC. VLC, of course, the vulnerable, awesome media player that I think everyone knows about. VLC needs no introduction. I love it, though. I love VLC for its transcoding ability, its network streaming ability. I'm looking at engineering our reruns over VLC. VLC is fantastic, Brian.
Yep.
And I have to give a call out to it because I've used it for so many years. I have issues with it from time to time.
But it's so great.
I really do like it. Now, and also VLC, you know, is cross-platform, so it's something that
cross-platform.
Yeah, so many different platforms can take advantage of, and I don't think there's one particular person I can give a shout out to for it. But I know that there's a whole team of project team over there, and I'll put a link to that team's bio in the show notes.
Yep, absolutely. We even talked with one of the developers about it back when the whole VLC on iPhone stuff was going on. Yeah, we talked to one of them. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right, you got another pick for me?
I got one last one.
All right.
And this one's one of the newer guys. This is the new kid on the block for me, Gwibber.
Oh, I love Gwibber.
It's the best social networking tool I have found. It's great. It's high quality. It's fantastic.
It sometimes
I love
gives
it.
Me a little heartburn, I'll be honest with you.
It It screws up every now and then.
Yeah, every now and then.
But it's new. You know what I mean? Realistically.
It's slick. It's integrated into Ubuntu really well with the Ubuntu Meme.
Really well.
Nice.
It looks great. It runs great. I love it. And I want to give a shout out. There's a lot of developers on the project. I'm only going to give a shout out to the guy that started it, which is Ryan Paul, who also happens to be a writer for Ars Technica.
Oh, really?
Started the Gwibber project. Now there's a bunch of individuals. Go ahead, and I'm going to bring this list up here.
Chat room's giving it some anti-love, Brian.
Here's some love there. Those are individuals. That's the Gwibber team right there.
Nice.
Ken and Dominic, yeah, we'll shout out to them. But Ryan Paul, who got that started, I like it quite a lot. Yes, there are other social networking tools. Yes,
yeah.
TweetDeck exists. But you know what? I love Gwibber. It's not that hard on the resources.
Yeah, definitely.
It integrates
it runs in the background
really
nice
well with my GNOME desktop.
Yeah.
I really like it. Now, TweetDeck is a great, great app.
Yep.
However, TweetDeck is this big Flash Air application that takes up a lot of resources. It looks really nice, but honestly,
the beauty to Gwibber
it's not my style.
The beauty to Gwibber is that you forget it's there until you need it.
Yes.
Or until somebody DMs you or whatever you have it set up.
Yeah, send a little thing, a little notification pops up. Yep. You're like, oh, I just got a thing on one of my several social media sites that I don't have to reload now.
And because it's so easily available.
Yep.
It lowers the barrier of entry to just click this thing and say this funny thing. Or, oh, look at this. Oh, I love this link. You don't even have to change off the page you're on. You just click over there, paste the link, you're done.
Easy.
It's nice.
Has built-in support for a whole bunch of different URL shorteners. They did a great job on it. I wanted to give them a shout-out because, honestly, that has helped out the Linux desktop.
Quick shout-out. You mentioned Conduit earlier. Conduit is the application that pipes stuff from one spot to another on your desktop.
Yeah.
It just does not get enough love. You guys, go check out Conduit at live.gnome.org/conduit. Now,
that's good stuff.
One last kind of big cerebral, huge overall pick is I wanted to say thanks to some of the big companies who are directly responsible for contributing to the Linux kernel. Now, interestingly enough, the Linux kernel is still primarily overall contributed to by individuals.
Yes.
But a lot of those individuals are either employed by big companies or the big companies are directly making some sort of patch for some sort of interest of theirs.
Right.
So here's how it breaks down.
Right.
Red Hat, sitting at 12.4% of the overall contribution share to the Linux
clear
kernel,
leader there.
Followed by Novell at 7%, IBM at 6.9%, a bunch of other people at 6.4% that kind of fall into an unknown category. But so I want to say thanks to Red Hat. We are probably the hardest on Red Hat out of all the Linux companies because they are the most visible and they make the biggest impact on Linux, so we watch them the most closely.
Yep.
But you do have
to... You got to respect that.
You got to respect the fact that they are... You know, huge movers and shakers and big contributors to Linux.
And I know that they're doing a lot of this contribution, you know, at least for the most part, because it helps their bottom line. But just the same, I want to say thanks to Red Hat for putting in all that time and all that money to make Linux better for everybody. We do appreciate it.
There you have it. All right, Brian, that's our big happy Thanksgiving thingy. That's a little late.
Yeah.
It's like leftovers. It's our Thanksgiving leftovers episode.
Is that what it is? Did we just name it?
Yeah.
Well done. And that brings us to the end of this most festive Linux Action Show. I want to thank everybody for watching it, or listening to it, or reading the transcribed version of it.
Not yet. We're working on it.
We don't have that?
We're working on it. We are working on that, though.
We do?
Yeah, we are.
How are we working on that?
Well, I've been talking to a company that, the problem is
are you joking
it's
with
funding,
me?
But I've been talking with them actually for almost a year now, but yeah.
Well, it doesn't like YouTube auto translate.
Oh, it's junk, though.
So if you're reading it through the YouTube auto translator service,
yeah.
Enjoy.
The problem is, you know what it is? They charge per minute, and last varies from 50 minutes to an hour and 45. And so, like on an hour 45 episode, we'd get eaten alive. So I'm just kind of.
And they'll just kind of make us stop talking.
Brian, that sentence cost us $1.25.
No, let's not do that.
Okay.
Yeah, let's not do that. So if you want to get in touch with us, head over to JupiterColony.com.
Yeah.
That's the forum. JupiterBroadcasting.com. That's the website.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting. That is Facebook.com.
Yeah, well,
you can go there.
The nice thing about that,
and you can lose your privacy and express your likeness of
and
us
and be
at the
told
same
about
time.
Products you likely are a fan of because they stereotype you.
Right.
But what you That's do nice. Get is announcements and notifications when we're doing our stuff.
Right. So we announce that stuff there when we're going live. We announce it there, which we do every Sunday except when we're sick or there's a holiday or we don't want to, at 10 a.m. Pacific time at jupiterbroadcasting.com/live. Yep. Now, if you happen to just randomly go to that URL slash live pretty much any time, good odds something might be going on.
Chances.
Some reruns.
Yeah.
Some people just chatting about reruns.
Yeah.
Or you can make fun of people in the Minecraft server talking to each other because you see their chats. Yeah. All sorts of stuff there. That's
and
great.
And it's funny. We linked our IRC chat room and our Minecraft chat room. And so, yeah, it's funny because you go in there any time during the day now in the IRC chat room, which you can find over on the live page, and there's people going in there.
You know, so I think I figured out how to finally link my BBS to the IRC chat
room.
No
kidding?
Yeah, I think I finally figured that out.
That would be epic.
So if you're a BBS-y guy, you can go over to the House of Lunduk BBS over at Lunduk.com, where you can tell that to it at bbs.lunduk.com. There's a teleconference area in there. I'm going to link that into the IRC chat room. So then these three completely separate entities will be merged together into one glorious IRC chat room.
Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to do next week.
We're going to do nothing next week.
We got something that you can't tell us what you're going to talk about, but it could be really cool.
Yep, that's happening next week.
Unfortunately, that's not a very good tease because we can't say what it is, but it's neat.
I can't tease about a darn thing.
And during the week, at some point, I got myself a new laptop, and it should be arriving, and I'm thinking about just doing we'll talk about what you can't say. And then we'll do a second part of the segment on tweaking Linux to run on an SSD. Because I've heard a lot of different reports, like should you use Extended 4 or XFS? Should you use journaling? Should you not?
I'm actually kind
of
curious.
What about trim support? You know, how does that work?
Honestly, I run my BBS off of an SSD.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I suppose a lot of people with triple E's and netbooks
and
are running off SSD.
It's running on Linux. And yeah. I could use some help to make sure I don't totally screw that drive up.
Now, and also the ButterFS has an interesting solution here for SSD. So maybe
let's talk about that next week. Okay. That'd be totally, totally awesome. Because I'm assuming it's the holidays and everyone gets an SSD for the holidays.
In their stocking.
That's how it works. Yeah, you get SSDs in your stocking.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. And we'll see you right back here next Sunday.
Bye-bye.
You could own it.
All right.
Stand by one, Brian. Stand by one.
I was going to own it right there.
I know. I can feel it. But now...
I'm ready!
Now you can shine while you own it.
Oh, I feel like my skin's warmer now. Whoa! Nope.
This is having me running it.
I got nothing. What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Our top story on the news docket.